Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Welcome to Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek. Marge was searching for the purpose of her life and the truth that would tie everything together to make sense of what was taught and what was happening on our planet, the fire that was creating all the smoke. Through many experiences, she was finally led to the Knowledge Book that provided all the answers. Marge is now talking about this gift to humanity on Knowledge Book Radio, so all can be united in peace, love, and harmony. This live call-in show at 1-800-930-2819 is amazing. So get ready to hear about the Knowledge Book. Here's your host, Marge Potasek.
Hello, everyone. I'm Marge Potasek, and you are listening to the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek on Transformation Talk Radio. For the next hour, as we've been doing for a while, we will continue our series of Omega Talks. And these are usually given at the end of every month as part of the unification program of the Call to Friendship Association that's mentioned in the Knowledge Book. In these talks, what we are doing is connecting science and spirituality, and this is done when we discuss world knowledge and world topics and connecting those topics to the Omega Dimension. Now, the Omega Dimension, as you know by now, is the 19th dimension, and this dimension has been opened up to our planet and to humanity for the first time through the Knowledge Book. And this week, the knowledge we're going to be connecting to the Omega Dimension is cats. Now, when you mention cats to people, some people hate them, some people love them. There's always some kind of an opinion about cats. Some people can't live without them. Some people don't want to be anywhere near close to cats. So there's been a divergence of opinion throughout history about what cats are and what they do and whether they're important to us or not. So today we're going to be going through something about cats, where they started, how they came to be, how they first appeared on our planet, what they look like as far as history is concerned. We'll touch on that a little bit. And as anyone has seen a cat in their backyard or even playing indoors, if there's an indoor cat, they will see certain characteristics like hunting and pouncing that seem very similar to what we see in the big cats in the wild. So it kind of makes you wonder how close or how far apart are our domestic cats to the wild cat population in the planet. Then, of course, some people own cats and have cats, sometimes more than one. I was just looking at a video on YouTube of a Korean family, a Korean woman who has 7 cats. And she plays with them, she does all kinds of stuff on them and with them. So what are the benefits, if any, of people who actually own cats? And of course, we'll finish up with what roles do cats play in evolution, both the evolution of everyone on the planet and specifically in human evolution. Do they have anything to do to help or to harm or to have no effect at all? So we'll start with the evolution as to how the cats came to be. Well, about 66 million years ago, a 6-mile-wide chunk of rock struck the area now known as the Yucatan Peninsula. Now, once that rock, 6-mile rock, struck, it took hours before the fragments of rock and other debris that were thrown into the atmosphere started to come back down towards the planet's surface. And the friction of all this rock and all this debris coming in and heating up the atmosphere, it heated up the atmosphere and the entire planet, so there are wildfires all over the planet. And after this, in the years following this impact, there was a thick cloud of dust and debris that blocked out the sun. And because of this, temperatures fell and vegetation withered. And as we know, the dinosaurs, which had dominated the ecosystems on land for over 130 million years, they all perished. The only remnants of dinosaurs that are still remaining on this planet are birds. But not only the dinosaurs were gone, those species of smaller animals that survived also were severely cut back, so that only 75% of known species basically disappeared overnight. So we only had 25% of species that were small that survived. But as devastating as the environmental catastrophe was, without it, there wouldn't have been any cats or humans for that matter. As the knowledge book says, one day you will come to the end and meet the beginning. And even what we view as the most horrific catastrophe produces positive results. The dinosaurs had to die so that cats and humans could live. So what does the first cat look like? Well, it's not really known, but there are theories. And based on whatever record of cats was left, you know, as far as fossils are concerned, it looked like kind of like a mongoose or a ferret. And as Charles Darwin once wrote, evolution is like a stone book for which we only have a few words or sentences in an incomplete array of chapters. So we have to pick and choose and try to figure out from whatever is left over, as far as the rough fossil record is concerned, to see what those animals look like. So this makes it very difficult to actually pin down the precise ancestors the further back in time we go. So what the paleontologists do is look for animals that have what they call transitional features. These are characteristics and traits that bridge gaps between groups. And this way they could trace back the evolution from the present back into the past. For the cat, this search has led the fossil experts to a little mammal called Proalius, or first cat, and the naturalist Henri Filot was the one that named this extinct beast back in 1879 from fossils that were found in France. Now the second cat, or the second version of cat, which is closer to what we know as a cat, is called the Pseudoalurus. And this was a more modern looking cat that evolved about 20 million years ago. Now these cats, although they look similar in features as far as the face is concerned, the arrangement of the body, they still had longer spine than current cats do, and they had a lot more teeth than current cats do. But eventually, through evolution, these cats lost the teeth because it was the side teeth that actually evolved to allow them to shear prey. And this was a fairly large cat, so much bigger than our biggest cat. So our biggest cat that's, you know, a domestic cat is about 20 to 25 pounds, which is, I think, the Maine Coon. So these cats were basically sized like the lynx, 20 to 60 pounds. And these are felines, and they spread across the planet for the next 20 million years, and they went from Europe to Asia and North America. So they spread everywhere. Now, at a certain point in time, again, 20 million years, there was a diversification in the cats. They split into two different groups, and they produced different forms. The felids, these are F-E-L-I-D, are the relatives and predecessors of today's cats with conical teeth like leopards and cougars. And the long-toothed variety were the saber cats. But in the history of cats, the saber cats were a group to themselves and included some of the most fearsome predators of all time, except right now there are no saber cats that exist on this planet. They have all become extinct, and it is the relatives of the felids, or the progeny of the felids, that evolved into the current cats of today. Now, all the cats that we know today, from the biggest Siberian tiger, which is 11 feet long and up to 700 pounds, to the tiny margay, which is 3 feet long and only weighing 10 pounds, these are called felids, F-E-L-I-D-S. And they represent about 40 distinct species spread across Americas, Europe, Africa, and Asia. And of all the wild cats, it's the big cats that get the lion's share of our attention. However, despite the fact that they share a large body size, not all big cats are basically close relatives to each other. There are two big subdivisions of living cats. One group includes tigers, lions, jaguars, leopards, and snow leopards, as well as the smaller clouded leopards. And the second group, the feline, F-E-L-I-N-E, includes cheetahs and cougars, in addition to the comparatively diminutive Flushing cats, sand cats, jaguar indies, and their relatives. So our domestic cats are actually the felines. Now, there was a new cat discovered, they think, back in 2008 in the Mediterranean island of Corsica. And over the past 10 years, their scientists have been on the trail of actually finding these cats, trapping these cats, and releasing them back to the wild and trying to figure out whether this is a new variety or not, or a new species or not. And this is being done by France's National Hunting and Wildlife Office. However, it's called the cat fox because of the way it's colored and the way it is marked. It is what is known as a densely furred, russet-colored wild cat with black striped paws and a black ring tail. What they've done through DNA tests is they found that this cat fox was most closely related to the African forest cat than to the European wild cat. But the jury is still out, and its exact identity still remains to be determined. Okay. So this is basically the development of the cat structure, what it looks like physically on our planet throughout time. Now we're going to go a little bit into a little bit of history of the cat as they appear over time. So the cats in Egypt, they think, or scientists think, researchers think, that the first associations of cats with humans may have begun towards the end of the Stone Age. However, it took many centuries for the cat to become established as a domestic animal, meaning as being part of the family or part of a family group. Now, about 5,000 years ago, cats were accepted members of the households of Egypt. Many of the breeds we now know have evolved from those ancient cats. The Egyptians used the cat to hunt fish and birds, as well as to destroy the rats and mice that infested the grain stocks along the Nile. The cat was considered to be so valuable in Egypt that they promulgated laws to protect it, and eventually a cult of cat worship developed that lasted for more than 2,000 years. And of course, the cat goddess Bastet became one of the most sacred of all figures of worship, and she was represented with the head of a cat. Soon, all cats became sacred to the Egyptians, and all were very well cared for. Now, goddess Bastet herself is the Egyptian goddess of the home, of domesticity, of women's secrets, of cats, fertility, and childbirth. She was the one that protected the home from evil spirits and disease, and especially those diseases that were associated with women and children. As with many Egyptian deities, she also played a role in the afterlife as a guide and helper to the dead, although this was not one of her primary duties. She was actually the daughter of the sun god Ra and is associated with the concept of the Eye of Ra, which is the all-seeing eye, and what is known as the distant goddess. And this is a female deity who leaves Ra and returns to bring transformation. Okay. Now, continue the cats in Egypt. After a cat's death, if a cat was a part of a family and it died, the family went into deep mourning and shaved their eyebrows. The body of the cat itself was actually mummified and was buried along in a special cemetery or in a tomb of the wealthy owners. And sometimes we have found mummified cats' bodies in pyramids. One cemetery that was found in the 1800s contained the preserved bodies of more than 300,000 cats. Cats were so valued and respected that killing a cat was punishable by death. So right now we only give the death punishment for really big capital offenses. However, if you killed a cat, which may not seem to be a big deal in our times, this was a big deal in ancient Egypt because they considered the cat to be so valuable. The Egyptians also were protecting, you know, the cats by having them not be exported or taken from Egypt to other countries. But because the cats are also valued in other parts of the world for their rat-catching prowess, they were taken by the Greeks and Romans to most parts of Europe. Domestic cats were also found in India, in China, and Japan, where they were prized as pets as well as rodent catchers. So throughout time, throughout history, ancient history, cats were seen as something precious, as something important to have around, and both as a deity, as someone to be living in the home, as a part of the family, and as a protective measure. Now, this is not only in Egypt, but other parts of the world as well. However, once we hit the Middle Ages, the fate of the cat changed radically. During the Middle Ages, the cat was viewed as evil, as bad luck, and was associated with witches, black magic, and the devil. People who had cats, especially black cats, were suspected of witchcraft and were often put to death along with their cats. Cats were hunted, tortured, and sacrificed. On religious feast days, large number of cats were sometimes burned alive as part of the celebrations. Live cats were sealed inside of walls of houses and other buildings as they were being built, in the belief that this would bring good luck. This persecution of cats, therefore their diminished numbers, backfired on the human population as the plague and other disease-carrying rats proliferated and 50 million people died as a result. So maybe this was the universe's punishment to those humans who did such great damage and harm to the cats. Now, there are many stories and many legends that are associated with cats. And some of these are as follows. So the first legend that I know about comes from the ancient Egyptians. The cats there were called mau, most likely because of the sound they make. The word mau is also translated as seeing or as light. Now, since cats' eyes appear so luminous at night, so anyone has caught a cat in their headlights at night, they're also associated with the moon, and their markings is said to reflect that relationship. Now, the Egyptian mau is a direct descendant of those ancient Egyptian cats, and it's an offspring of the African wildcat, and it carries the M on its forehead to this day. So if you notice many cats that are tabbies, meaning they have markings like a tiger or spots, or they have an M on their foreheads, starting from one eye to the other eye, and it looks like an M. There are other legends as well. In Christianity, the M marking on the forehead of a tabby cat is said to be where Mary, the mother of Jesus Christ, touched and blessed the tabby cat that warmed and comforted her baby. In Islam, on the other hand, the M marking stands for the Prophet Muhammad, who had a great fondness for cats. Now, as far as the Muslim world is concerned, a dog is considered to be unclean by many Muslims, not all, and they are supposed to be living outside the house and not in. The cats are considered to be clean because they bury their own waste and rarely eat another animal's feces. So the cats, as far as the Muslims are concerned, are clean. And Muhammad, when the call to prayer was sounded, cut off a sleeve of his robe where his beloved cat Muezza was sleeping, not to disturb her. And there's another story about Muhammad, apparently that he loved cats very much, and one of those cats that he had, or was surrounded by, saved his life from a snake that had crawled into his sleeve. Another legend also says that Muhammad blessed cats with the ability to land on their feet. And it is remarkable, and there have been there's a NOVA program that basically investigated why cats land on their feet. It's fascinating. If you have a chance, look it up, and maybe you could see how fantastic that is. Now, one of his writings, Muhammad's writings, also says that he had a vision of a woman who was punished in hell for starving her cat to death. And now currently, according to the knowledge given, the M on the cat's face signifies a missionary whose task is to transmute negative energy to positive energy. So it is a good idea, and it is recommended to have two cats in the home to help eliminate negative energy. So I don't know whether anyone has this experience, but I've had two cats before, and whenever I came home tired from work, was exhausted, was depressed because of the situation at work, I would sit down on the couch and the cats would come over and cuddle next to me and sit next to me, and eventually I was feeling better, was able to do some other work during the evening. Now we'll go and look a little bit about the cats in the arts. So the cat itself has been a favorite subject of artists and writers for centuries. Now, perhaps the best known of all artistic representations are those of the Egyptian cat goddess Bastet, which can be seen in hieroglyphics. Now, Japanese artists were excellent in portraying the cat. Some of the drawings were so realistic that in ancient times they were thought to be magic. People believed that if the drawings themselves were hung in homes and in temples, they kept the rats and mice away. So if you have a chance, if you could look up, you know, cats in Japanese paintings, they're beautifully rendered pictures of cats and paintings. They're absolutely amazing. Now, Japanese Buddhists venerate cats after death. And the temple of Gotokuji, I'm sorry if I'm butchering that pronunciation, in Tokyo is dedicated to them. Now, to continue the cats in the arts, cats have been portrayed in the works of many great artists, including Leonardo da Vinci, Albrecht Dürer, Paul Gauguin, Theodore Géricault, William Hogarth, Edward Manet, and Pablo Picasso. Probably the best known cat in the world is Felix the Cat, which is, of course, the star of animated cartoon films. Other famous cartoon cats include Crazy Cat and Tom and Jerry of Tom and Jerry fame, both of which had mice for companions. And currently we have Maru, Grumpy Cat, Colonel Meow, Nyan Cat, and Keyboard Cat of internet YouTube fame with billions of views. Today I was looking at something called, Dream Heroes. I have to look it up again. But anyway, this is the cat. This is seven cats living together, and it's an amazing. They have millions of views. One of those videos had 2.8 million views. Another one had 2.7 million views. There are a tremendous amount of views of cat videos on YouTube. And of course, cats in the arts. The third longest running Broadway show, Cats, they ran 7,485 performances. What this Cats was is based on a book written by T.S. Eliot, a world-famous poet, and the book was called The Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats. So this is a musical rendition of that book, and it was running on Broadway. So this is a, this is composed by Andrew Lloyd Webber, and everybody knows some music from that. Other musicians also, like Giacomo Rossini and Maurice Ravel, have also paid homage to the cat in compositions. So the cat is a fascinating subject for musicians, for artists, for writers, for poets, everywhere. Now, if you think about the cats and people having cats, how many cats are there? Well, as of 2017, there were over 94.2 million cats living in homes in the United States, 7.5 million house cats in England, 13.7 million house cats in Germany, and 13.5 million house cats live in France. And there are many other countries with cats, however, their numbers are smaller. So how many cats are there in the world? Well, some people estimate the number to be either anywhere from 200 to 220 million to 600 million plus cats. Now, of course, producing an exact number of cats is nearly impossible because counting feral cats, those free-roaming cats that can be found in almost any neighborhood or behind the grocery store or near restaurant garbage bins, which one organization estimated at about 158,207,000, is a lot like trying to herd cats. And of course, cats are famous for being independent creatures that do not want to be counted, that do not want to be herded, that do not want to be directed. Unless, of course, you have a cat who's more like a dog, and they come when you call them, which is I have two like now. And I call them into my room, and they actually do come in. So cats are independent. However, they are more one of them is more stand aloof. He will be near you, but not on you. However, the other cat is much more touchy-feely and is much more in my lap. So I have both combination here. Now, of course, the question arises, who domesticated Koo? If the cat is so independent and so wants to be on its own and is a solitary creature, did we actually domesticate them or did they infiltrate into our lives? And actually, people who live with cats like to joke about how these small fuzzy creatures are still wild, basically training us rather than the other way around. So we become their servants as opposed to them being our servants. And what they've done is they ran genetic tests and a genetic study of ancient cat DNA, and that shows that we are basically right, that cats were not domesticated in the same way that dogs and cows and pigs and goats were. They lived among us, but it wasn't until very recently that we began to change them. So the cats are initially solitary, independent creatures, and it's only now with the association with the humans that the cat itself has started to change. And unlike dogs, whose bodies and temperaments have transformed radically during the roughly 30,000 years we lived with them, domestic cats are almost identical to their wild counterparts, physically and genetically. And house cats also show none of the typical signs of animal domestication, such as infantilization of facial features, decreased tooth size, and docility. Wild cats are neither social nor hierarchical, which also makes them hard to integrate into human communities. So what is the difference? According to a study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in 2014, many of the differences between the wild and the domestic cats are in the genes that govern their personality traits such as aggression. So those cats that are in the wild have genes that govern, and they are more aggressive. They're more prone to fight. They're more prone to attack. So wild cats are much more aggressive by nature, whereas house cats are more likely to form memories and learn through reward-based stimuli, as well as tolerate and even enjoy human interaction and contact and living with the family dog. So, of course, there's always this idea that cats and dogs are enemies, and dogs are actually attacking the cat, but it turns out in terms of domesticated cats and the cats that we have living with us, they live with dogs and associate well with dogs. So what is the difference between the wild cat and the domestic cat? Well, number one, there's the brain size. Although they're nearly identical in structure, wild cats have slightly larger brains for their size than domestic cats. They also have a different pupil shape. Unlike the vertical slit pupils of our domesticated felines, large cats have round pupils. According to a study based in the Journal of Science Advances, this difference is related to lifestyle. So wild cats have rounded pupils. Domestic cats have slit pupils. And of course, we have the purr. The purr of domestic cats, actually domesticated cats purr, but they don't roar. But lions roar but don't purr because they have different anatomical differences in throat autonomy between the two. So these are the differences: brain size, pupil shape, and the production of the purr. And what do they share? They've done genome sequencing, and that shows that the tigers and house cats share around 95% of the same DNA. Tigers are closely related to other big cats, so it goes without saying that there are plenty of ways in which the house cat is like its wild cousins. Some of the shared attributes include, number one, sleep. Both the wildcat and domestic cats spend between 16 to 20 hours a day sleeping. So if anybody has seen a cat, it's mostly somewhere either on a chair, in the dining room underneath the dining room table, on a sofa curled up, or in the sun, basking in the sun, in the windowsill, or outside, or under a couch, or under a bed, or on top of a bed sleeping. They spend 16 to 20 hours a day sleeping. Now, wild and domesticated cats have also a great sense of smell, and both of them, both the wild and the domestic, when they have their mouth open, that's when they smell better. So they'll leave their mouth open when they're sniffing things to get a better sense of smell. Now, as far as food is concerned, both wild and domestic cats are primarily on a meat diet because they have enzymes that can digest meats, but they cannot digest plant material. Now, one interesting fact is let's say a big cat captures a gazelle or captures an animal and kills an animal that basically is a grazer, meaning has eaten lots of vegetation, what they do is actually eat the intestines first. So they have a prepackaged form of vegetables that are pre-digested and already ready for them to ingest and process in their food in their stomachs because it's already been pre-digested. It's like us eating yogurt where the milk protein has already been partially broken down and digested by the bacteria, allowing us to more easily assimilate those proteins. So any kind of vegetation nutrition that is prepared for the lion or whatever the big cat has done the hunting, that's being done, and that's why they eat the intestines first, and then they save the outer coating, meaning the muscles and the bones, maybe up in a tree, maybe somewhere to hide it, and that eats that over a span of days. Now, what I found interesting is this. My one cat, I think he's a Siberian mix. Anyway, I found it's very interesting that when he eats a little bit, next thing you know, he looks like he's moving his paw along the floor like he's burying his food. Same thing happens to the water, and he's spilled many a container of water that I have for them to drink because he's hiding it. And to me, it seems like, oh my goodness, this is just what it looks like for the cat in the wild that is burying its prey, that is burying its food for later use. So when they're saying that the cats and the are identical between domestic and wild, I see it, you know, right in front of my eyes. And of course, a cat wouldn't be a cat unless they were grooming. So self-grooming is done both by domestic and by wild cats. Whether you're a lion or a tiger or a cheetah, you'll be grooming. And they spend of the awake time, which is 8 to 4 hours, 30% to 50% of that time they spend grooming. So cats are very clean animals. They basically clean themselves off and they like clean surroundings. Some other shared characteristics are, of course, stalking. And all cats, whether they're big cats or small cats, will stalk their prey and generally confine their hunting to dusk, nighttime, and dawn. So if you're trying to get a good night's sleep, that may not be actually very possible because the cats like to what we call play at that time and what they call hunting at that time. So they'll be hunting for stuff on your desk or they're hunting for stuff on your dresser. Next thing you know, whatever's on the dresser is on the floor and your neighbor downstairs, if you're living in an apartment, is not very happy with you. Or in my case, I had some cats that basically a shelf came down. But anyway, this is their time for hunting, both the little cats, domestic cats, and for the wild cats. And if you've seen pictures or films of animals, of cats hunting in the wild, and if you look at your cat that's stalking the other cat waiting to attack, it is exactly the same posture, the same exact intent look on their faces, totally focused, ready to jump and pounce. And of course, big cats and little cats all like to play. Whether you're a little cat or domestic cat and want to play, you know, jump around and chase a pointer, or unraveling a roll of toilet paper or string, and even playing in boxes. Now, one of the videos of Maru the cat shows him being inside of boxes, tiny boxes, big boxes, all kinds of boxes. He loves boxes. They also ran this experiment. I saw something on YouTube that they were running experiments with big cats. So they provided big cats with rolls of toilet paper, rolls of paper towels, and they did exactly what these little cats do, what the domestic cats do. They were playing with the toilet paper, they're playing with strings, and I was shocked to see that lions and tigers jumped into boxes. Of course, there were bigger boxes, but they jumped into boxes as well. Now, if you want to keep a cat happy for a while, just provide them a box or provide them a bag, and they'll be in there playing for hours. Of course, that's when they're not sleeping. Okay. Now, there's an interesting thing about catnip. Now, there are certain genetics of certain family lines of cats, both wild and domesticated, that they react strongly to and enjoy catnip. So some cats can get drunk on catnip and some cats no, depending on, you know, their genetics, their current genetics. But that is the same both wild and for domestic cats. Territory marking. All types of cats use similar methods to mark their respective territories, including spraying, face rubbing to distribute their scent via the glands on their faces, to scratching. Well, if you're a tiger or a lion, you'll scratch a tree trunk. However, if you're a cat, they'll be scratching either your leg or the sofa. So, you know, those of us who have furniture and would like to keep that furniture, we try to find ways of trying to teach the cat not to be spraying on the sofa and not to be scratching the sofa. So we provide them with scratching pads, we provide them with surfaces that they can scratch, therefore they leave your better furniture alone. Maybe. But anyway. So these are all similarities. Again, there's some more shared characteristics. Now, the voice or the sound that they produce. Now, just like when we hear the meowing and the chirping that we hear from our cat, big cats have also their own talking to another. They have their own language and own sounds. They talk, however, meaning either whether it's growls or some kind of sound or chattering or clattering, whatever it is, or what they call chirping, but cats reserve meowing only for humans. They do not meow to each other. They only meow to humans. So apparently they have developed a language that they have using specifically with us humans who are in contact with them. And domesticated cats, just like their big cats, play with their food or they hide their food. Wild cats will often hide their kill by moving it somewhere else or burying it in order to save it for a later meal. So this is what I was talking about earlier, where, you know, my cat is, even though there's no dirt on the ground, he simulates the movement of trying to bury his food. Same thing with the big cats. And of course, there's this kneading. No one knows why certain cats knead. However, some believe that it's a carryover from nursing and a show of contentment. Wild felines also engage in this enduring behavior, meaning the kneading. Now, as far as the kneading is concerned, the cats have a way of healing you. I know for a fact, and this happened to me, I was working late hours, and I was always tired and exhausted by the time the day was finished. And there was a cat that basically at the end of the day would jump on my back and he would knead my neck and back area. And by the time he was finished, I felt completely better. My energy shifted and I was able to rest as opposed to laying in bed constantly thinking. So he relaxed me. And cats, of course, there have been stories also of cats actually healing people, of saving people, or keeping people alive up until an ambulance arrived because they were having a heart attack. There are other cases as well, but we'll cover that a little bit later. But right now we were talking about whether the cat was domesticated or not. Well, apparently they are not domesticated yet. We're only at the beginning of cat domestication. So today's wild cats and house cats are still virtually the same. But in 8,000 years, we might have as many breeds of domestic cats as we have dogs. So if we, you know, throw our imagination to the wind, we could imagine a golden retriever-sized cat with the same sunny disposition. And tomorrow's cat lovers might be living with the baby-faced tigers or ultra-fluffy purse cats who look like kittens forever. So you see these kinds of dogs, whether a purse dog or the golden retriever, being kind and gentle and always, you know, with a sunny disposition, never angry, never impatient. So maybe we'll have cats that are not aloof and solitary creatures, but maybe more sociable. But that, we'll see whether that'll happen or not. Or, which is probably the case, cats will continue to defy domestication. They could carve out a place as one of the only animals to befriend humans without ever falling completely under our control. So basically, what's happening is that our association with cats is not one of domination, either humans of the cats or cats of the humans. It is a cooperative kind of association and mutual help. So in reviewing the long cat human association, it appears, and I seem to have lost my place. Okay. In reviewing the human and cat domestication, we are mostly in a mutually beneficial relationship. And according to the knowledge book, when an energy form cannot merge with its spiritual energy, another species is formed. Now, there are about 10,000 species of birds, but there are only 40 to 60 species of domestic cat. So the cat seems to have been very successful in moving up the evolutionary ladder because we don't have that many species around. So we have 40 to 60 cat species, while there are 100,000 species of birds and hundreds of thousands of species of insects. Okay. So the cat somehow, through its association somehow with what it is doing, it is able to jump to the next dimension more easily, and therefore it is able to merge with their spiritual totality for that dimension and is able to then to progress to the next dimension. And also, according to the knowledge book, once a cat has completed its evolution in its own dimension and merged with its spiritual energy, the cat has the power to then become a fetus and then come to this planet in a human body. So it looks like the cat seems to be an energy form, a body form, that is very successful in merging with its spiritual totality and is then able to move on to become a human directly from the cat form. Okay. Now, what are the health benefits of cat ownership? We've talked about whether they're similar or different from wild cats, and we talked about lots of things in terms of similarities and differences and a little bit of place in the history. What are the benefits of cat health ownership? Number one, owning a cat can be a soothing and release calming, can be soothing, and the fact that we own a cat, there are calming chemicals that are released in the body that decrease stress and anxiety levels. A short and sweet petting session is often enough to relax owners and reduce stress and anxiety. Holding a cat is kind of similar to holding a baby. You get the same kind of feeling of love and the same kind of feeling of no stress and peace. If you own a cat, you're also less likely to be at risk for having a stroke. than any other type of pet owner. And scientists speculate this is also because of the cat's lower maintenance of ownership. Well, I don't know about that one, but owning a cat is certainly therapeutic. And having a cat can also release oxytocin in the body, which is the chemical of love and trust. People who go through grief or mourning report that talking to their pet helps work out their feelings, because it's sometimes much easier to talk to a pet than it is to another human. Also, studies have found that children with autism, children with on the spectrum, were more likely to be less anxious and calm while petting a cat, and can more easily connect with cats and or other dogs. So I saw something again on YouTube where a family with a child on the spectrum, when they got a cat, the child itself was afraid of water. However, the cat was not afraid of water, was again a Maine Coon. And the child was built a connection with the cat. And when the cat was in the bathtub with the child, then the child had no problem with water. Now, did you know that also having a cat also boosts immunity? So the fact that there is dander in the fur when the child is first growing up then results in increased resistance to allergens and decreases the risk of allergens and asthma. Now, of course, we've heard before, at least I have, that it's not too good to have a spotlessly clean environment, especially if you have a baby, because in that case, the baby is not able to build up the antibodies against anything. So the immune system is weaker in an ultra-clean household. Of course, when a cat purrs, it purrs during both inhalation and exhalation. It has a constant pattern and frequency, and that frequency is between 25 and 150 hertz. Now, they had various medical studies and investigations, and that has shown that those sound frequencies in this range improve bone density and promote healing of tissue. When I had my procedure, it was very interesting. Depending on where the hurt was or where my body was trying to heal, that's where my cat would lay down and purr. And somehow that purring always felt good, and always felt good afterwards. Also, when you have a cat, you have a decreased risk of heart disease and heart attacks. There was a study that was conducted by the University of Minnesota Stroke Institute in Minneapolis, and it has shown that those who do not own cats are 30 to 40% more likely to die of heart attacks. So again, cats somehow are able to transmute whatever the humans have in their surroundings and in themselves, and is able to eliminate it. Cat ownership also lowers triglycerides and cholesterol levels. Now, of course, high triglyceride and cholesterol levels contribute to heart disease and are symptomatic of type 2 diabetes, as well as strokes, liver, and kidney disease. So as long as the cat lowers these levels, then we are much less likely to develop those diseases. Cats also increase sociability, meaning the cat owner provides a natural conversation starter and can enhance the owner's ability to socialize. One study revealed that women were more attracted to men who owned cats because the cat ownership often suggests sensitivity and intelligence. So guys, you want to get that woman, then get yourself a cat. And of course, cats provide companionship. It reduces loneliness. And even though cats are known for their independence, however, there is a bond that is developed between a cat and its owner. And a Swiss study conducted in 2003 showed that owning a cat is actually having a romantic partner. So you always have someone there. Now, we've gone through many stories, but this is something I think we need to consider as well. There are such things known as hero cats. And these are special cats. There was a soldier in Afghanistan who adopted a small kitten that came into the camp. And the soldier started to develop depression when his patrol was attacked by a suicide bomber. The soldier decided to commit suicide, and at this point, the cat started making a deep purring noise that he hadn't heard before, and that brought him back from the edge, and he saved the soldier's life. Now, there is another story, and this deals with a 4-year-old boy. He was playing outside when he was attacked by a neighbor's dog. Now, the family's cat attacked the dog and chased him away. And again, saved that boy's life. There's another story about an owner having a seizure at night. And since the cat couldn't wake her, the cat ran to her son's room, and the son was able to get help for his mother, again saving the woman's life. So there are many other stories. Excuse me. Of cats going beyond the distance to be able to save their owners and companions. Now, so these are hero cats. These are cats who basically risk their lives, who went against their innate, you know, hunting capacity and characteristics, and are able to not only think about themselves, but think of others. Now, as explained in the knowledge book, Fascicle 11, page 146 to 147, every energy goes through evolution in its own medium and in its own reality. Once it has gone through its own evolution plan, it is then transferred to the world dimension for additional evolution and is exposed to different energies through the spiritual mechanism. It then is sent back to its own dimension to become a leader or a teacher in their own reality. So, all the animals on this planet have their own reality, have their own dimension where they are going through, undergoing their own evolution. When they go through a certain stage of evolution in their own dimension, they are transferred to the planet and they somehow are associated with individuals. They're associated in experiences that allow them to go back to their planet, or actually go back to their dimension and become the teachers in their own dimension. Now, so a cat goes back to his dimension, especially those animals like dogs, like cats, like ferrets, like birds, whatever animal we have in our homes, because of their association with us, they're able to pick up our energies, our characteristics, and they become gentler, especially if the household is gentle. They will become gentle. They will become more loving. They will become more kind and be much more likely to think of others before themselves. And in those cases where the animal comes in and the household has a negativity in them, then that cat then transmutes that negativity and transforms it into positive energy. So if you know of anyone who basically had only a single cat in the household, you'll find that those individuals with that were dealing with negativity or had negativity in them, their cats died early. So in the knowledge book, quote, the energy leaving a cat's body one day claims the reality of God by means of these comings and goings, and it can be embodied in the shape it wishes to have. It transfers itself as a fetus. This again is Fascicle 11, page 147. Okay. Now, so the cat in contact with the human then becomes a genuine human. An energy starts out, whatever energy it is, whether it's a mouse or a bird or a human, starts out driven by instinct. And it is intent on its own survival. It gradually goes through different realities and dimensions and eventually arrives at the form of a cat, where it is, quote, on the path of becoming a human in a matured human reality. Fascicle 11, page 147. Both cats and humans, once they attain the thought of helping others, like the hero cats, means that the ring of ego has been broken and has broken the ego chains. Again, Fascicle 11, page 157. So both cats and humans mutually help each other to evolve by undergoing various examinations and evolution plans and learn and practice love, patience, tolerance, detachment, respect, generosity, humility, acceptance, responsibility, etc., etc., etc. Eventually, by following the path designed in the knowledge book, the status of a genuine human is attained. So this is a mutual beneficial association between cat and human. Okay, and now I think we've reached the end of our time. And it is time for me to say that there are two focal points in New York City. If you would like to come and visit, please look at the website. If you'd like to contact us, then the website is www.usa.theknowledgebook.net. My email address is mmjp99@gmail.com. MaryMaryJohnPeter99@gmail.com. My telephone number is 973-787-7035. This is for information or questions or not, or questions or topics. And humanity's verdict is always in humanity's hands. The rope is in our hands. We will either hang ourselves or save ourselves. As the knowledge book states, and Mrs. Chirac frequently reminds us, you are the ones who will save the world. Thank you. See you next time.
You've been listening to Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek. Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity, and its time of transition to the Golden Age that provided the truth and energies and frequencies. Now, she shares information from and answers questions about the Knowledge Book with you each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit Marge at usa.theknowledgebook.net.